which is a very ancient Kabbalistic work that some attribute to Avraham Avinu, and some even attribute to Adam HaRishon, which talks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu used the koach of the Aleph Beis to create heaven and earth. And in fact, it says that even the Chachamim were able to use the different combinations of the Aleph Beis to create forms of life. The Gemara in Shabbos recounts that there were two Amoraim who used to make a cow or a calf every Friday through Sefer Yetzirah, which they would then shecht and eat. That is how a golem is made, if you can make a golem, through the koach of Sefer Yetzirah. There is, of course, a discussion in halacha whether a person that is created through Sefer Yetzirah can be counted for a minyan. Some want to compare it to cloning, but basically, of course, a golem, you'll see the relevance of this in a moment, a golem does not have a nefesh elokis, does not have a divine soul. Essentially, it's a robot. It's a robot that is created by supernatural means, but it does not have the divinity of a human being. But be it as it may, what Sefer Yetzirah does is, for every single month, it connects it to a shevet, a tribe. Every month you have to do a shevet, and it also connects it to a sensory function, hearing, seeing, or the like. So for the month of Nisan, which is the first month of the year, is connected to Reuven. And Reuven's very name is connected to the notion of seeing, Re'iyah. Right? What did Leah say? Re'ei Hashem Anyi, Hashem has seen my affliction. I am not as beloved as Rachel, and therefore he has given me a son. So Nisan is connected to the notion of sight. The second month, Iyar, is connected to Shimon. And Shimon, in turn, is connected to the sense of hearing, Shama Hashem. So Nisan is the month of Re'iyah, and Iyar is the month of Shemiyah. And Rav Tzadok explains that the difference between Re'iyah and Shemiyah is Re'iyah can occur only in the immediacy of the moment. So for example, you see something. Once it's not here, you don't see it anymore. But the notion of hearing something, right? You can hear about something after it happened. You can't see something except as it happens. You can hear about something even after it happens. You're not hearing the event, but you hear about the event, right? I could tell you about what happened yesterday, but you can't see now what happened yesterday. So if Sadduk explains, Nisan is when we perceive the Hashkacha of Hashem in an open and obvious way. Iyar is a month of Hester Panim. We're no longer experiencing the Gilui Shechina of Pesach, but we still hear about it. We remember it through the koach of Shemiyah. So that's an important idea, because as the Yomim Tovim fade, although Baruch Hashem we have another Yom Tov coming up, but as the Yomim Tovim fade, one can lose the momentum, one can lose the enthusiasm, and yet we know that Fakert, this is a period where we build up our enthusiasm, because we're counting towards Matan Torah, which is the very tachlis, the very purpose of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And therefore, we need to tap into our koach of Shemiyah to try to remember and try to recount in our own minds the Chasdei Hashem of Geulas Mitzrayim and the Geula that occurs all the time, B'chol Dor V'Dor, even though we're not in the Zman where we're capable of directly experiencing it. And that is the idea of Shemiyah. By the way, it's a similar parallelism, Rav Tzadok points out, in a different context. The relationship of Iyar to Nisan is actually quite similar to the relationship of Cheshvan to Tishrei, where, in fact, Cheshvan is perhaps even worse, because Tishrei you have all the Yomim Tovim, and then you have a long stretch. Cheshvan has no Yomim Tovim at all, and then you have a few months, etc. Now, in Sefer Yetzirah, it's a little bit of a different idea, that Cheshvan is connected to the sense of smell. But once again, it's similar to Shemiyah, because smell is what can linger even when the mamushus is gone. If you have a delicious roast chicken or something, so even when the chicken is gone, the aroma lingers. So it's the idea. So the same idea that Iyar is Shemiyah, Cheshvan is Reyach, but the Avodah is the same, to try to hold on to the pivotal kudja of these great events and extend them into ordinary life. And that's a big nisayon. The Chazon Ish used to say that even a pot that is half filled will boil over when it's on the fire. What he was suggesting is this: if a person is enthusiastic and emotionally high, in moments of great sanctity, that doesn't mean he really has a lot of ruchnius inside of him. Even if he's half empty, it'll bubble over in the fire. But the real test about how full a pot is when you take a pot off the fire and it cools down, does it still spill over? If it's really full, it'll spill even when it's no longer hot. If it was half empty, it's no longer going to spill over. So the real test of a Yom Tov always is, what is our life after Yom Tov? Has Yom Tov changed us? Has Yom Tov transformed us? If we simply go back to normal, it really hasn't done its job. Anyway, one of the kashas I have to work out the calendar a little bit more, is, as you know, when Acharon Shel Pesach, in the Gola, when the eighth day of Pesach falls out on Shabbos, and in Eretz Yisrael it's no longer Pesach, Eretz Yisrael is one parsha ahead of Chutz La'aretz, and this will be for a while, because we read Parsha Shemini last Shabbos, and we read Tazria Mitzora this Shabbos. In Chutz La'aretz, since last Shabbos was the eighth day of Pesach, they read Shemini. Right? So if you're going back and forth, you know, you might find yourself missing a parsha. Now what's going to happen eventually is that before Rosh Hashanah, they're going to, Nitzavim V'yelech is going to be separated here, and it'll be Mechubur in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz La'aretz, so by the time Rosh Hashanah comes. But the thing I don't understand is, why do we have to wait so long for this problem? And we could have solved the problem this week. Meaning, if we would simply read Tazria this week and Mitzora next week, and in Chutz La'aretz next week they would read Tazria and Mitzora, we would be cut up immediately. Now this is going to happen anyway. In other words, there's going to be, that's how we catch up, that in Chutz La'aretz they'll combine Parshas, and Eretz Yisrael will, in Chutz La'aretz they'll combine, and in Eretz Yisrael they'll separate. But I don't know why we couldn't do it this week. This would have been a very, very, this would have solved it immediately. But apparently the idea is that Tazria Mitzora is so intimately connected that we never break it up unless we absolutely have to, which we have to do in a leap year, because we don't have too many Shabbases, so to speak. And that brings me to what I want to talk about today, and that is the book of Vayikra generally is a very forbidding book to people. You know, people, too many halachas and technicalities, and it's hard to understand. And even people who've learned in yeshiva, you know, if they haven't learned Kodshim or in Tyros, the book of Vayikra is hard to understand. Very few stories in the book of Vayikra. I mean, the only story that's there is the death of Nadav and Avihu, which isn't the happiest story, but that's about it. Everything in Vayikra are halachos. And as a result, when you learn Chumash superficially, Vayikra would kimat be the first thing that you would skip. In other words, if you weren't reading everything, say, I'll skip Vayikra, let's get to the stories, etc. And yet we find that Chazal assigned an extraordinarily great importance to the book of Vayikra. And the time of Chazal, this was the first Chumash that children would learn. That when a five-year-old would start learning Chumash, they didn't start with Bereishis. They started with all of the halachos and the difficult passages in Vayikra. And the Medrash gives the reason, because little children are still pure. They have not become tamei by their averos. And korbanos is pure. And therefore, those who are pure should learn that which is pure. Now, if korbanos are difficult, and they are, what's even more difficult are the laws of Tumah V'Taira, particularly, although the laws of Nidah are based on Vayikra, which is actually very important, la'halacha b'zman hazeh, but the most obscure halacha is that of Tsaras. Tsaras is a very, very difficult set of halachas. And it's quite amazing the extraordinary amount of detail the Torah goes into in all the permutations of leprosy. In point of fact, the amount of space the Torah devotes to Tzaras is much more than it devotes to Shabbos and Kashrus and certain even Taras and Mishpacha. Taras and Mishpacha, which is also in the same parsha. Taras and Mishpacha is only given a fraction of the psukim that are devoted to the inyanim of Tzaras. Now, there are a few different reasons for this, but let me point out a few basic things that I know that you know, and then we'll connect it to the Haftorah. Obviously, although the standard English translation of Tzaras is leprosy, it does not correspond to the modern disease, which is Hansen's disease, which used to be called, actually it's not called leprosy today either, but it used to be called leprosy. Hansen's disease corresponds, actually the Gemara seems to allude to Hansen's disease, but it doesn't call it Tzaras, it calls it Mukesh Chin. There actually is something in which a person's limbs might fall off, etc., but it's nothing to do with Tzaras. Tzaras, and by the way, the word psoriasis comes from Tzaras, but don't... But psoriasis was not Tzaras either. But it comes from the same thing. It actually is very similar. But Tzaras is a skin condition, but Chazal make it very, very clear that it does not come from physical disease, and it is not contagious as a disease. Although there are some that want to say that the quarantine of the Metzora is based on a public health idea not to spread contagious diseases. And yet that is not how Chazal view it at all. Chazal viewed Tzaras as a message from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that there is something in a person's life that they have to correct. It is a physical manifestation of a spiritual rot within a person, which is mechayev the person to do tshuva. Seen in this light, the Ramban makes a beautiful observation. Tzaras is actually one of the gifts that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives Am Yisrael, at least in a negative way, in which, you know, we often say, if only Hashem would tell me what I need to do. Tzaras is one of the ways Hashem tells us what we need to do. And therefore the Ramban says, Tzaras only exists when there was prophecy. It only exists in Eretz Yisrael. It only exists when there's a Beis HaMikdash. And now that we don't have any of that, it's like we're diminished. We live in a world of Hester Panim. Now, one major exception is in the Haftarah of Naaman. I'll get to that. But Bederech Klal, the manifestation of Tzaras is toloi on Nevuah, on prophecy, and on revelation of God's presence, which is an important lesson. And that is that even the negative punishments that Hashem gives us can really be guides that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us what we need to improve. Now, specifically, there are three basic types of tzaras. There is tzaras on the skin, there is tzaras on clothing, and there is tzaras in houses. And Chazal basically say the primary aveira of tzaras on the skin is lashon hara, and the word mitzora is motzi ra, he who says bad about other people. The primary aveira for tzaras of garments is gassus haruach, which is arrogance and gaiva, because clothes is often a way that we try to boast to others. And the third one, tzaras of the houses, is because of tzoros ayin. Tzoros ayin is when a person is selfish in not wanting to share their resources with other people. And the reason why, they keep their homes to themselves. And as the Chumash says, when a house has this leprosy in it, everything in the house must be taken out of the house. So essentially, the mida keneged mida is, you're trying to keep your wealth inside, you will be forced to show it outside. So the big three, there are other various too, but the big three are tzaras ha'or basor, tzaras of the skin, lashon hara, tzaras of begadim, gasus ruach, tzaras of batim, tzoros oyen. Now there's another chazal that says that although we do have certainly documented cases of tzaras of the skin, including Moshe Rabbeinu, although he had a limited one on his hand, when he said the Jewish people are not deserving of redemption. Miriam, of course, when she said, you know, why is Moshe better than us that he separates from his wife, right? So you see in the Chumash itself that Tzaras is connected to Lashon Hara. Now I will say one thing. There is one Tzaras, one of the Malchi Yehuda had Tzaras. And L'chaira, it's not connected to Lashon Hara. This is Uziyo HaMelech. If you remember, Uziyo HaMelech decided one day, he was a righteous man actually, but he decided one day he wanted to be a Kohen Gadol as well, although he was not a Kohen. So he enters the Heichal to bring Ketores, and all of a sudden there's a blotch of Tsaras on his forehead. And since Chazal say a Mitzrayer is considered to be like a dead person, that's when Yeshayo had his famous vision of Hashem's Kisei HaKavod, and it says it was the year that Uzziyahu died. Vahi Bishnas Mos HaMelech Uzziyahu. Chazal understand the chronology that Uzziyahu didn't die, but he became a Mitzrayer. Now, again, yeah, that's a little difficult, because the Chayra, if we were to identify Uzziyahu as Avera, it would seem to be connected to Gasus Ruach, a certain gaiva that he was good enough to be a Kohen. L'chayr, there was no Lashon Hara involved. So there is a Yaitzeh min HaKlal. But Chazal say, B'derech Klal, the Tsaras of the flesh comes from Lashon Hara. Now, a few basic points. The Kohen has a pivotal role in Tsaras. Now, this is one of the Rayas, although first you want to bring a Raya, you see that Tsaras is not a medical condition because you go to the Kohen and not to the doctor. Now, if that would be your only raya, that actually is not a very good raya, because in the ancient world, generally, priests were often doctors, so that wouldn't be a raya, but I'll bring you some other rayas from halacha, that it's not a medical condition. Because it says like this, a person is not a mitzayra until the Kohen paskins he's a mitzayra. Right? Like the umpire says, it ain't a strike till I call it a strike. It's not saras until the Kohen paskins. Now, because of this, the Mishnah says that there are certain times of year where the Kohen, even though he sees that it's Tsaras, he should not proclaim it to be Tsaras, because that would take away Simcha. The Mishnah gives two examples. One is during Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed. If somebody gets Tsaras in the middle of Yom Tov or Chol HaMoed, the Kohen is not supposed to declare that it's Tsaras, because that would take away the person's Simchas Yom Tov. Now, if it's a disease, if it's a reality, a physical reality, that makes no sense at all, because essentially you're endangering people because of Simchas Yom Tov. Elamai, it's a spiritual construct. It's not the spiritual Tsaras until the Kohen proclaims it. The other example the Mishnah gives is a Chasan or a Kala during Sheva Brachos. If a Chasan or a Kala during Sheva Brachos gets Tsaras, the Kohen is not supposed to paskin on it until afterwards, not to interfere with the Simcha. So those are rayas, actually, la halacha, that we're not dealing with hygiene and we're not dealing with medicine. We're dealing with spiritual maladies, and as a result, it's shayach when it's appropriate to delay it for various reasons. Now, why is the Kohen so important here? And the other thing about Tsaras that's notable is that this is the only tumah in which the tamei person must be in isolation for a period of time. No other tumah requires that the person be isolated. So the Mefarshim explained the following, that part of the process of tshuva, when a person does an aveira, part of the process of tshuva requires that the person understands the gravity of what he's done. And part of the way we understand the gravity of what we've done is experiencing, on some level, the pain that we cause others. Now, a person sometimes thinks, oh, Lashon Hara is no big deal. It's only words. It's only speech. And yet, Lashon Hara creates divisiveness. It creates hurt feelings. It creates rejection. It creates isolation between people. The Mitzrayer needs to experience what it's like to be isolated and alone, because by experiencing isolation, he has now internalized some of the pain that he has caused by Lashon Hara, and this in turn will awaken him to tshuva. Right? One of the greatest ways that we always come to tshuva is when we can put ourselves in the shoes of the people that we might have hurt. And then we see, gee, I didn't realize it was so bad. Similarly, that's why we have the Kohen, because a Baal Lashon Hara might often say, what are words? Words are not actions. Right? The old saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. And yet, we know that that's simply not true. Often the pain of words can be much, much deeper than even physical afflictions. Person breaks their leg, the leg will often heal. A person's hurt by very hurtful or spiteful or hateful words, there might be an injury to them that might never get better. I remember years ago hearing an interview with Richard Nixon, who had gone through, you know, quite a lot. He had been vice president, president, Watergate, resigned the presidency. So he's been through the whole thing. And what was he talking about? He was talking about the insults that you get in the sixth grade playground, how some of that hurt never went away. And this has consequences. This has consequences. Part of why Watergate happens was because of sixth grade taunts. You know, these little things can have repercussions that might affect the whole world. So the whole exercise of Tzaras teaches the Mitzayra the Kayach of Dibor. Your attitude is words don't count? Well, look at this. If the Kohen says Tameh, you're a Mitzayra. If the Kohen says Tahar, you're not. It's only words? Words create realities. The Koach HaDibor. That's why Tzaras is so connected to the power of speech. Because to teach the Mitzorah once again, that speech creates realities. And finally, the reason why the Kohen is so important is Pirkei Avos tells that one should always try to be like the Talmidim of Aaron, to be Ohev Shalom, lover of peace, pursuer of peace. That the message to the Mitzayra is, to everyone who speaks Lashon Hara, the goal is not to shut up and become mute. Dibor is a great gift. Speech is a wonderful gift and capacity that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us. Look to the Kohen as to how you use your words. Use your words to be Ohev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, right? Ohev Es Habrios, right, to love all, it doesn't even say love all Jews. It doesn't even say love all people. Ohev es Habrios, in a very literal sense, love everything, including the animals, all living things. Umakarvan l'Torah. That probably is mainly going on the Jews, to be makarv them to Torah. So the idea of the Kohen is two things. Number one, it teaches the Mitzorah the power of speech. And number two, it reminds him to look to the Kohen as to how that power should be used. Okay, so this is kind of the general idea of Mitzorah. But what I want to share with you is something a bit more technical, and that is I want to go through the procedure, not for houses or clothing, just for skin, and then see what lessons we can derive from that procedure, particularly in the aftermath of Pesach. A person wakes up one morning and discovers they have a white spot on their skin that may or may not be tzaras. They are obligated, man or woman, they are obligated halachically. They can't cover it up except during Shavuot Baruch Shalom. They're supposed to go to the Kohen. Now, the Kohen's first determination is it the right shade and is it the right size? Again, it's similar to the Shilas of Nida, but tzaras, in fact, by the way, it happens to be that the shi'or for a kesem, for a blood stain, is kigris v'yod, the size of a bean or a little more. That is actually a shear derived from tzaras. The tzaras has to be that big. In other words, it's derived from the same shear. And also, there are different shades of white. Just like in the time of the Gemara, there were different shades of red. Well, there were many, many different shades of white, and not all shades were tzaras. But let's assume the Kohen determines that the nega, as it's called, is the requisite brightness of white and the requisite size. The person is not declared a Mitzorah yet. The person is quarantined provisionally. He is what we will call a provisional Mitzorah, and you'll see the importance of that. And the term for a provisional Mitzorah is Muskar. Muskar is he's put in quarantine for 7 days. On day seven, the Kohen re-examines him and looks for one of three additional signs added on to the nega. In other words, the nega, in order to graduate, to become a real metzora, the nega has to have one of three simanim of tuma. One siman is, either one of these, any one of these. One siman is that there was a black hair, let's say a black hair was growing in the area, and the black hair turned white. That is a siman of tuma. A second siman of tuma is the nega is bigger than it was, it expanded. That's called michya, that's called pisayon. And the third, which seems to be counterintuitive, because you would think that it's a sign of health, is if in the middle of what had been a white spot, there's a little bit of healthy flesh, that's a siman of tuma. That's called michya. If on day seven, any one of those three signs exists, he's kicked to be a permanent mitzora. When I say permanent, I mean he's a mitzora until it goes away, and then he has to bring korbanos and everything else. Now that could be another week, that could be another 2 weeks, could be another month, it could be another year. But at that point, he remains in quarantine. At that point, he moves from musgar to muchlat. 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 Even if the simanim of tuma then leave, he remains muchlat until the whole nega goes away. And there are korbanos that he has to bring. Now, what if on day seven, the nega is still there, but he does not have the simanim of tuma? He is quarantined for another 7 days. And on day 14, which he's still a muskar, in other words, for week number two, we make a second examination, the Kohen rather, for the same three simanim. If he has any of those three simanim, he's muchlat. If he doesn't, now this is interesting, if he doesn't, he goes back home. That's it. Meaning, 14 days from the appearance of the nega, if he does not have a siman of tuma, one of those three simanim, his status as hesker terminates. He doesn't need korbanos, no korbanos. He goes back home. So a person can actually have a negat saras on his hand or anywhere. And halachically, after the 2 weeks of quarantine, he goes home unless there's a siman of tumor. Right now, this is only one example because, once again, this is the procedure that is followed when you have saras on the flesh. But if there's saras in the hair areas, a whole different procedure. If there's saras that comes after burns, there's another procedure, right? So it's too much to take in, all of these things. I just want to trace one particular type of saras. This is saras on the skin. Now, what can all of this mean? What relevance would all of this be? How do we explain it? Is there a way we can understand it? So one of the mahalchim that Mefarshim give us is a very, very beautiful idea. And the basic thesis is the following idea. The Mitzora goes into quarantine and isolation in order to go through a process of introspection and tshuva. The Siman of Tuma is God's statement to him, you haven't finished the process yet. You need to be there longer. Now, how do the Simanim of Tuma teach us this? Because here's the thing. The one thing that all human beings are very good at is that when we are confronted with some tangible evidence of our wrongdoing, we immediately seek defense mechanisms and excuses. And there are three types of excuses a person gives themselves. Now, we can apply this specifically to Lashon Hara, but it applies to everything. Excuse number one is, I convince myself that I didn't do anything wrong. I deny the wrongdoing. Now, in Lashon Hara, this might take different forms. You might say, for example, they deserved it. Although halakhically, that's not a justification. You know, they deserved what I said about them. Or, you know, I could have said much worse. Or they speak Lashon Hara about me. But whatever, these are not valid excuses. But these are the way we convince ourselves, I didn't do anything wrong. That's called the defense of denial.
That is symbolized by the black hair turning white. Because even in English, we talk about whitewashing a situation, covering it up, making believe there's nothing bad there. So the Seir Lavan is Hashem essentially telling the person, you're living in denial. You don't think you did anything wrong yet. Go back into quarantine until the nega goes away. That is one response that we have, the response of denial. There is another response we have, and this is a response where we are very cognizant of the wrongdoing that we've done. We know how bad we've done it. But as a result, we feel so broken, so despondent, that we feel there's no way I can ever do tshuva. I might as well stay on the path of destruction, because there's no way I can ever come back. Right? The famous statement, which is based on a pasuk in Yeshayahu, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we will die, is actually not a hedonistic statement. It is a statement of the deepest despair when a person feels there is no hope. We might as well drink ourselves into oblivion. In fact, there's a famous medrash. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked Adam HaRishon, why did you eat from the Eitz Hadas? Adam HaRishon said, Ochalti, I ate the Eichal Od, and I'll do it again. So most people see that as defiance. He's telling Hashem, I'll do it again. Don't try to stop me. That's a little strange. Adam HaRishon is talking back to God this way. But the Bali Musar say, no. This is the statement of a broken man. He says, I messed up. And I know I'm going to do it again and again and again. And I just have no way to stop myself anymore. The pathos of a person who feels totally helpless in the grip of the Yetzer Hara. This is not denial. If anything, this is an over-consciousness of the evil that we've perpetrated, but it leads to a despondency and a hopelessness. That is signified by pisayon, the nega spreading. That's when the person says, I'm so bad, I might as well stay bad. Because that I can do good. And a person might say, I know how to do Averis. But to change myself, that I can't do. Right? So if Seir Lavan is the sign of denial, the growing of the Makkah is the sign of hopelessness and despair. And Hashem says, nope, that's not right either. Go back, think. There are things you can do in a good way. Then we come to a third psychological response, which is a bit subtle. And that is, the person doesn't live in a state of denial. Cognitively, they know they've done wrong. But they don't let themselves be emotionally aroused by it. Possibly because otherwise they'll turn into category two, meaning a person who has a tendency to get overly depressed might adopt a strategy of not allowing themselves to be emotionally affected by the things they've done wrong in their life, so they can simply go on an even keel. In the short term, sometimes that is necessary, but ultimately it also means you're not confronting what needs to be done. That is called michya. See, that's why michya, from a medical standpoint, michya would be a sign of health, right? The tzoras, you're getting healthy flesh in the middle of the nega. But michya is symbolic of the idea that you're surrounded by rats, but you don't let your core feel that. You don't let your core sense it. You create this illusion of healthiness in the middle of the rat. So these are the three simanim of tumah: the siman of denial, the siman of hopelessness, and the siman of emotional distancing. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling the person, in all three cases, you still got to go back and do tshuva. Now, interestingly enough, these actually correlate to different forms of chametz. Although we're beyond Pesach at this point. That is, everyone knows that chametz is a remes to the Yetzer Hara, and destroying chametz is part of destroying the Ra within us. In fact, that is the prayer that we recite when we burn the chametz, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu should allow us to burn the Yetzer Hara. In fact, they tell a beautiful story about a Hasidic Rebbe. During Bedikas Chametz, he spent hours and hours looking for chametz, and afterwards he started crying and he pointed to his heart and he said, "And what do I do about looking for the chametz here?" So his Talmidim told him, "It's a beferish halacha. Any place that you don't bring in chametz, you don't have to check." So they says, "Your heart is in makom. They don't bring in chametz." He says, "Okay, but specifically, what about chametz is connected to the Yetzer Hara?" So there, the Maral gives three different symbolisms for the correlation of chametz and the Yetzer Hara. One is the obvious one that everybody knows. Chametz is puffed up, although we have these Pesach rolls, they're also puffed up, but chametz is puffed up, and it represents arrogance and gaiva. Matzah is flat, representing humility. That corresponds to denial, because when a person lives in denial, they are making themselves better than they really are. That's an expression of gaiva. So that corresponds. So the ser lavan corresponds to the chametz of puffed up. The second nafkamina between chametz and matzah, the Maral says, is chametz spoils and rots. Matzah cannot really spoil. Matzah is not spoilable in that sense. They still have matzah from Masada. And that represents the idea of hopelessness, because hopelessness is where, you know, once you started, you might as well go all the way. You progressively get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. That corresponds to the spreading of the tzaras. And the third aspect of chametz and matzah, the Maral says, is that chametz represents inertia. Because remember, if water falls on flour, you don't have to do anything. It will become chametz. Chametz is what happens automatically. Matzah requires action. So that's the notion of emotional distancing. When we emotionally distance ourselves from the challenges in our lives, we are simply living with inertia. We're not taking initiative. And therefore, the three aspects of chametz connected the Yetzer Hara does correspond with the three simanim of Tumah. So it could very well be that Tazria Mitzora, we have to keep them mechubar, because the laws of Tzaras are in both of the parshas, and the central ideas are so significant. Now, I know that today obviously is Rosh Chodesh and Good Chodesh, and the Haftorah yesterday was Mochar HaChodesh, but I'm going to spend a few moments talk about the Haftorahs of Tazria Mitzora, because they are the regular Haftorahs and they tie into what we were talking about. And that is the two haftiras. Of course, whenever the parshas are mechubar and it's not Shabbos, Mechor HaChodesh, you always read the second haftarah. That's always the rule when two parshas are mechubar. But the truth is, both haftiras deal with Mitzorayim in the book of Malachim, and they are really consecutive, almost consecutive prakim in the book of Malachim Beis. The first is the famous story of Naaman, who was Sar Tzava, the great general of Aram, of Syria, that was a great enemy of the Jewish people. And Naaman is described as a Gibor Chayil. Of course, Chazal really say, what was his great heroism? So it's very, very fascinating. Naaman was credited with killing Achav, killing a Melech Yisrael, which you would think, you know, that certainly makes you a big hero in Aram circles, but he did it by accident. What big heroism. He shot an arrow, not knowing who he was shooting at, and it happened to hit the right guy, you know. But because of this, this is a raya. In fact, Chazal say, again, like Uziyah, it's a bit of an exception, that Naaman's saras was gasus ruach. There was a certain gaiva that he had in himself, although there was nothing that he accomplished. And what was his second great accomplishment? He led a foray into Eretz Yisrael, and he captured a Nara Katana, and he managed to capture a young girl. So great military exploits, etc. So part of the psukim were trying to be merames, the gasus ruach of a person who became a great military hero, totally, I mean,
Legabe Hashem, it wasn't an accident. Hashem decreed that Achav would die, but mitzad Naaman, there was no courage in his part, there was no heroism in his part, there was no mesiras nefesh in his part, there was not even skill on his part. The arrow just happened to hit the right guy because HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that Achav the Rasha would die. But be it as it may, you see, by the way, the Tovas Ayin of a little Israelite slave. I mean, she is a girl that was, in fact, Chazal actually say, she's called a Nara Ketana. And Chazal actually have a little bit of a problem because the word Na'ara means a girl who's at least 12 years old. Ketana is below 12. And Chazal actually says she was below 12, and the reference to Na'ara is the city that she was from. She was taken from Na'aran. So she actually was a Ketana. And you could imagine that she might be quite bitter at being separated from her parents. Maybe her parents were even killed. We don't really know the circumstance. And yet, out of the kindness of her heart, she sees that Naaman is suffering because of Tzaras. And she recommends, why don't you go to this great Navi in Eretz Yisrael, Elisha? Surely he will be able to cure your husband of Tzaras. I mean, firstly, I think you see a tremendous Tovas Ayin here, that she actually comes up with an idea that would help, actually winds up helping as well. And Naaman has to get his boss's permission, and his boss sends a letter to the Melech Yisrael at the time saying, Naaman is coming, cure him. Now, the problem is that the Melech who succeeded Achav Yehoram is also a Rasha. He doesn't want to follow Nevi'im. So he says, the king is trying to trap me, the king of Aram. But be it as it may, Elisha got wind of this. Elisha says, send him to me. And what happens is Naaman shows up with a big gift. And Elisha does not even come out to meet him. Elisha sends a shaliach that say, by the way, go to the Yarden, dip 7 times, and you'll be fine. Well, Naaman, who of course is Gassus Ruach, is very offended. He shows up. He's told to take a bath. He's not even told directly by the Navi. The Navi is too busy to see him. And Naaman says, I came here to take a bath. Amano Parpar. These are the great rivers of Damascus. Much better than the Yarden. But be it as it may, the story goes, he does go 7 times. He gets better. He becomes a Baal Tshuva. Some say he actually became a Ger. Some say he became a Ger Toshav, meaning a Ger Tzedek is someone who becomes Jewish. A Ger Toshav is someone who accepts the 7 mitzvahs of Bnei Noach. And he wants to give Elisha gifts. Elisha refuses because this is part of a Kiddush Hashem, that he doesn't do it for money. He does it for the glory of God. However, if you go on with the story, there's a very sad ending. It's not in the Haftorah. And that is Gehazi comes and says later, pay up. And when Elisha discovers it, he decrees that Gehazi and his 3 sons should become the Mitzaras of Naaman. So that's kind of the, in fact, that's the next Haftarah. The next Haftarah talks about the 4 Mitzaraim. Chazal say that's Gehazi and the 3 children. Now, the story of Naaman has a few interesting points. And we don't have time to go over the whole story, but one story is, it is very, very unique and perhaps unparalleled, that tzaras, halachic tzaras at least, should afflict a non-Jew, particularly outside of Eretz Yisrael. I had mentioned the Ramban's point, that tzaras is kind of a gift of nevuah, that Hashem is giving you a sense of what you need to correct, and therefore it only belongs to Bnei Yisrael, and only in Eretz Yisrael, right, in a Zman of Nevuah. Well, this is a Zman of Nevuah, but Naaman fails 2 of the other elements. This is in Chutz Laaretz, Aram, Syria, and it also, he was a Goy. So you see the Ramban doesn't give us a full Mahalach, but you see here that in order to create the great Kiddush Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Nevi'im are given the Koach to be Merape, all types of Machalos, this was a yotze min haklal. But there's another interesting aspect of this as well. A very strange conversation. Naaman says to Elisha, number one, he wants, after Elisha refuses to take a gift, Naaman actually asks for a gift of himself, for himself. He wants to take a lot of dirt. He asks,
let me take the dirt of Eretz Yisrael back so I can build a Mizbeach to Hashem. Right? He wants the offer of Eretz Yisrael. And Elisha gives him permission to do so. And then he has a very strange apology. And the Gemara discusses whether Elisha was masking. He says, you know, I believe in God and I've become a Baal Tshuva and I accept at least the seven commandments of Noach that prohibit Avodah Zarah. But here's the problem. When my master, the king in Aram, goes to his temple, to his idolatry temple and bows down, he needs me to like pick him up and lean with him. So I lean down and I bow down on my knees to the idol just to pick him up. He says, Yislachna, please forgive me. So Lechari is thinking like a guy a little bit, asking the priest for absolution, because the other is, it's not really Elisha supposed to forgive him, it's Hashem. But this is the way Naaman still thinks. No, please forgive me for this. Elisha says, Lech l'shalom. It's a little ambiguous. Is Elisha giving him a yes? Or is Elisha basically saying, listen, you're going to do it anyway, I'm not telling you one way or the other. But the Gemara discusses the following idea. The Gemara discusses this idea. We know by a Jew that even if a Jew's life is in danger, a Jew is not allowed to do an Avodah Zarah. An Avodah Zarah is one of the mitzvos where pikuach nefesh doesn't matter you. It's yehareg v'yal yavor. And that's because of Kiddush Hashem. This is the obligation to sanctify God's name. We must be willing to die before we worship Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has the following question. B'nai Nayach are also forbidden in Avodah Zarah. But are they commanded in Kiddush Hashem? Meaning to say, can a Noachite worship Avodah Zarah? If they don't do so, their life would be in danger. Because the pasuk of Kiddush Hashem is V'nikdashti b'toch b'nei Yisrael. So the Gemara actually brings in a very important halachic proof. The Gemara says, the Gemara is assuming Elisha was maskim to Naaman's request, although I'll peep shot, that's not 100% clear, but that's the Gemara's assumption. Lech l'shalom, it's okay. The Gemara has a very important halacha. B'nei Noach, meaning Goyim, are not mitzuveh al Kiddush Hashem. Because essentially, if Naaman would refuse to take the king to the idolatrous temple and bow down, the king would kill him. A Jew would be obligated to give up his life. The Gemara is mochiach from this story that a non-Jew is not obligated to give up his life. So it's a very important halacha. Now, you might be thinking, why would even a Jew have to give up his life? I mean, this isn't Avodah Zarah. If I'm bowing down with the king just because I'm raising him and lowering him, I don't intend to worship. So here's an important point you have to understand. You have to understand that the halachic definition of Avodah Zarah, this is a very important point halachically, does not depend on your subjective state of mind. Because if that would be the case, why would you ever have to give your life? I mean, obviously, if I bow down to an idol because my life is threatened, I don't believe in the idol. Rather, Avodah Zarah is forbidden even if it's an external act without kavanah. It is the external manifestation of Avodah Zarah for which a Jew must give up his life even if he does not believe it. Because every case of Yehareg V'al Yavor, you don't believe it. So why can't you say, I'm not doing Avodah Zarah, I don't believe it? Answer, we don't care what you're thinking. You're mechuyev to give up your life based on what you're doing. Now, that would mean, for example, the Maranos. Again, technically, a person should give up his life before he acknowledges Christianity, l'chol apachos. But let me point out another thing that the Rambam writes. Of course, the Rambam wrote this hundreds of years before the Maranos. The Rambam writes, it's important to understand that even when the Torah says you must give up your life, if you fail to do so, that's an Avera, but you're still a Jew. In other words, you haven't renounced your Judaism. It's an Avera. You were Mevatel, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, but you're still a Jew. And whatever mitzvahs you do, you try to do. So It's not like people think, you know, oh, once I've renounced Judaism, I'm no longer Jewish. Of course, a person's Jewish, and every mitzvah is chaviv, but he was mevatel. He did not fulfill the obligation of Kiddush Hashem.
About the Zara, is that idolatry, or that is Christianity considered idolatry?
Yeah. Again, the Rambam writes in a censored passage of the Rambam. The Rambam wrote Christianity. And of course, this was pre-Reformation, so the only Christianity the Rambam was aware of was Catholicism. The Rambam does say it's Avodah Zarah. There are opinions that say it's not Avodah Zarah for Jews. It's not Avodah Zarah for Goyim, but it would be Avodah Zarah for Jews. So that's an old machlokas. Non-Trinitarian forms of Christianity, Unitarianism, for example, is probably not halachically Avodah Zarah, because they essentially believe that Yashka was Mashiach, but they do not believe he was divine. Again, a Jew is not allowed to believe that either, but it may not be Avodah Zarah mamish. Okay, so those are the two basic points. There are many more points as well. The two basic points of the Naaman story is, number one, the very unusual idea that a non-Jew gets saras for Kiddush Hashem. And number two, as a side point, the Gemara's whole discussion of whether Bnei Noach are mitzuveh al Kiddush Hashem. Now, the next story of the Haftorah, which is the Haftorah of Mitzorah, also has a very important halachic point that's very relevant b'zman hazeh. It starts off with four mitzorayim, and this is a time of famine because of a siege. Aram is besieging, right? So as a result, food is cut off. And these four mitzvahs are chutz l'machaneh. Chazal say this is Gehazi and his three sons, etc. And they figured everybody's starving. If we stay here, we're going to die. Let's go over to the Aram people who have food. If they kill us, they kill us. If they take us prisoner, we'll at least get food. And they come, and miraculously they discover a whole camp that was abandoned by the Aram, by the Syrians, full of food and supplies and horses and gold and silver, more importantly, food and water and the like. And what happened was Hashem had made a miracle in which there was the appearance of a huge army, and therefore they fled in panic. And these four mitzrayim bring the stuff back to Machne Yisrael, and Baruch Hashem, everyone is able to eat. But there's a curious little story there, because Elisha had told the king the day before that even though there's no wheat and no barley, but by tomorrow there'll be so much that you'll get a whole sah for a shekel. The price will go down. And a certain guard said, how can that be? Even if there's windows in the heaven and it would start raining, how can that be? And Elisha told him, you're going to see it and you're not going to eat anything. And the story goes that he was trampled. The crowds were going for the bread. He got trampled. He saw it and he didn't eat. And that was a kiyum of the word of Nevuah. But what's interesting is the halachic point I want to bring out is the following. The four mitzrayim made the following cheshbon. If we stay here, we're going to die because it's a famine. So let's go to Aram in the hope that maybe we'll get something to eat. Now, l'chaira, when they go to Aram, they're taking the risk they might get killed immediately. So how are they allowed to take a risk that they might die immediately? You're not allowed to put yourself in immediate sakana. So the Gemara says an important klal, that when your present matzav is called chaye sha'ah, meaning to say, when your probable existence now is chaye sha'ah, meaning, if you don't do anything, you're going to die in a short amount of time, you're allowed to do something that might extricate you, even if it may result in chaye sha'ah being terminated even faster. Now, this is very important for example, people who have to undergo operations. Let's say a person has, this is exactly the yesod, a person has a heart condition, a person has cancer, God forbid. And the question is, if they undergo surgery or chemotherapy, if they do nothing, the prognosis is they will die in 10 months. If they do something, there is a high chance they might die right away. But there is a small chance they might be cured. So the question is, are you allowed to endanger the Chaye Shah that you have if there's a chance that it might give you a prolongation? So the Gemara says, we derive from the four mitzrayim exactly that cheshbon, that they were endangering the Chaye Shah on the kavana that perhaps they'll be able to live, right? So this is a riot. Now the question becomes, how does it calculate in terms of percentages? That's not an easy thing. Let's assume, for example, if the person does nothing, for sure they'll live for 10 months. That's pretty certain. If they do something, what if there's only a 1% chance they'll live and a 99% chance? In other words, the question becomes, can you endanger Chaye Shah if there's any chance of survival? Or must it be over 50%, or must it be 20%, a higher percentage, etc.? Right, that's a whole machlokas haposkim. Now, I do realize that often, and this is a share for another time, often the shaila that's presented is the opposite shaila. Are you mechuyev to undergo the surgery? And the answer is you're not mechuyev either. But that you don't see from this shtickle. What you see from these psukim is the other way around, that you are permitted to undertake hazardous procedures if there's a chance that it will save you from the Chaye Shah situation. And that's derived from this. So Bidas may have a good Chaydish, a good... Yeah?
Is